Well, we're going to keep this just as comfortable and light as we possibly can, Gary.
Good. Okay.
So just start out with, I'm Steve Hansen. It's Wednesday, January the 10th, 2018, and we're talking with Gary Niebuhr. And so, Gary, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, about growing up and where you grew up and...
Well, first of all, thank you, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and to share some things about my past and my life here in Edwardsville. I've been very fortunate. I grew up and lived in Edwardsville all my life. Born actually in Highland, Illinois. My dad worked at Shell, had a career at Shell, and they moved here shortly before I was born. So I've spent my entire life in Edwardsville, which I really to this day count my blessings, because I feel like I was just very fortunate. I had a marvelous family, mom and dad and four brothers and sisters. Grew up on Dunlap Lake here in Edwardsville, which was a marvelous place to grow up as a kid, with the fishing and the swimming and the ice skating and plenty of activities to keep kids busy. I went to St. Boniface. All of my brothers and sisters did as well. I consider myself really fortunate in that, even at a very young age, I had the opportunity to meet some people that at the time were certainly my elders, but people that I looked up to in the community, even when I was in my teens and beyond. And one of the things that I recall vividly, and I think had something to do with the paths that I would take in the future, was when I was very active in Little League Baseball and all the other things that kids were active in. At a young age, I recognized the importance of those people that kind of stepped up and did things as simple as coaching a Little League Baseball team. I remember having coaches that didn't have any kids on the team. They just kind of wanted to help. They just kind of wanted to play a positive role in the kids' lives. And that kind of stuck with me, and that's why as time went on, I felt like I needed to do something to kind of pay some people back and try to contribute to the community.
What was your plan when you were graduated from high school? What were you thinking that you were going to do?
You know, I wasn't sure, to be honest with you. And I think, I will tell you that, and sometimes I jokingly talked with my friend Mike Weber and Ed Rodney. And at one time, believe it or not, when I was young, I thought, you know, gosh, maybe I'll be a mortician. And that thought didn't last long. But I really didn't have anything. I wanted to be involved in the community. And I think I learned that, again, from people that were kind of mentors to me and that I looked up to. And I remember that, to give you an example, just a couple names, John Hunter Jr. was a dear friend of mine. He was certainly much older than I was at the time. But these were people like the Bob Wetzels of the world and the folks that really were people that kind of constructed the foundation of this community. And I just always looked up to them and said, you know what, I want to play a positive role in the development of the community that I really intended all along to be here for the rest of my life. I had no great desire or interest to move away or even go away to college or depart what I thought was a pretty good place, and that was this place. So I think I always had an interest in parks and recreation, and so that was actually my first job was with the city of Edwardsville, and it was actually very early on when I was between my junior and senior years in high school, and then during the summers for a couple years, I worked part-time for the city in their parks department, and I did the traditional park stuff, cut grass and clean the parks and did this and did all that. And lo and behold, the opportunity came about when I was probably 22 or 23 that the position of Parks and Recreation Director was open. And a gentleman by the name of Ernie Tavosky, you may know Ernie and Chuck from the home nursery. Ernie was the chairman of the park board at the time. And he came up to me one day, and I was nothing but a kind of a part-time ground supervisor. And he said, so-and-so at the time, he said, he left. He's no longer with us, and we just need somebody to kind of supervise the crews and keep things going. And I said I'd be happy to do what I could. So that eventually led me to being named, at the time, the youngest Parks and Recreation Director in the city. And I was happy. I was very happy. And it gave me a taste of what I really felt was good, sound public service.
When approximately was that? You say you were 22, 23?
Yeah, I think I was 23 when I took the job as Director of Parks.
And what year was that?
That would have been, oh my gosh, 73. What, maybe back in 78, something like that.
So that was your first start actually also in politics then?
Yeah, to a certain degree it was I remember very well back then a good friend of mine, this gentleman I still miss to this day, Steve Ellsworth. And Steve, somewhere in that time frame, Steve was a State Farm insurance person here, and very well known, very popular gentleman. And Steve ran for mayor, and Steve won, and then I was in that role at the time Steve was mayor of Parks and Recreation Director, so I got an opportunity to kind of, and I was friends with Steve already, but I just had a chance to kind of get to know him better, and Steve would not mind me telling this story, but because I said it when I did one of the eulogies for Steve's funeral a couple of years ago. And I told Ray, his wife, and the kids were obviously listening, and I said, so I'll never forget Steve, and he it was only about 2 years after Steve was in as mayor, he I saw him somewhere, and he looked at me and kind of waved me to come to him, and I walked over there, and I said, well, hi, Mayor, how are you doing? He said, I'm doing okay. He said, you kind of, even though you're really young, you've kind of hung around here for a while. He said, I got one question for you. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, does this thing have to last 4 years? Steve was a great guy and contributed immensely to the community. But I think being mayor, Steve found out, was not really the gig that he thought it was going to be. But I'll never forget that story about Steve. But it just kind of gave me a working in city government just kind of gave me a little taste of what, you know, maybe good public service could be all about. And I guess my take on it was, even after years of being involved and 8 years as a member of the city council and then ultimately 20 years as mayor, I really never looked upon myself as being, quote, in politics, or a, quote, politician. I don't know why, but it was just, to me, it was just, it really all came about because I just had a sense of public service. You know, being someone, and there are hundreds and thousands of people that do this throughout this country, it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't partisan politics. It was just remembering back when I was in Little League Baseball and having all these older people at the time, you know, just kind of trying to help me and steer me in the right direction. And I don't know. I don't think there's any magical thing about it. It was just, I just kind of felt like I love this community. And, you know, if I can get gainful employment here, I have no interest in leaving here. And so...
So you say you got elected and to the city council.
Yeah, what happened...
Was that your first elected office?
Exactly. So after I was director of Parks and Recreation for, gosh, maybe 4 or 5 years, this position at the YMCA came open. And an interesting connection to somebody you probably remember the name of, Buzz and Mary Ann Shaw. Well, Mary Ann Shaw was the president of the YMCA Board of Directors, and their CEO had left. They were in need of a new executive director today, the title CEO. And it kind of sparked my interest, even though I had not, up until that time, I really had not been active in the YMCA. But there was a lady that to this day I love and respect, Nina Baird, who was, as you know, she was city clerk for many years. So when I was with the Parks and Recreation Department, obviously I interacted with Nina. And Nina one day said to me, you know, Gary, you know, I don't want you to think about leaving the city, but what about that YMCA job? That'd be something you'd be really good at, and they need somebody that's that can really kind of, you know, move that organization forward. And I thought about it, and Nina said, well, I've already talked to Mary Ann Shaw and said you'd be a great candidate. And I smiled when I said, because I couldn't believe she would do that for me. So I went through the process and eventually was hired here. So after I was named the CEO here at the YMCA, the Aldermatic spot on the city council came open, and it was in an area where I lived in town on Ruskin Avenue. And I said, what the heck, I'll run for city council. I did. Served as a member of the city council for 8 years, elected in, I guess it was 1985, served 2 terms. And then toward the end of my second term, a gentleman who you, Dennis DeToy, was mayor at the time. And Dennis was kind of almost like Steve Ellsworth. 4 years for Dennis was enough. Dennis did a good job, and he cared immensely about the community. But Dennis decided, I'm not gonna run again. And since I was on the city council, I started giving some thought, and Dennis was very encouraging. And so I guess it was the spring of 93, I guess. I decided to run for mayor, and ran, was elected, and ran 5 more times. And so my record of public office was 7-0, 7 wins, no losses. And I felt at that time that, you know what, maybe I shouldn't risk the next one, and I decided pretty much long before my last term that would be my last term. And it was just, I loved what I did with the city, and loved the community, and loved the contributions that we kind of collectively made. So,
Gary, what did you have in terms of opposition when you ran for mayor?
When I ran for mayor the first time, there was a gentleman who was a retired police officer in Edwardsville by the name of Roy Bouse. Roy today still lives here. Roy was a good friend then. He continues to be a good friend. And Roy was on the city council as well. So when Dennis DeToy decided not to run again, it just happened that me and Roy kind of both decided we're going to give it a shot. And it was a very, you know, it was something that made me feel good about campaigning. Today, when I look at campaigns, I sometimes don't feel good about it. But back then, it was, in essence, kind of two friends that decided to kind of look at that same office and put their best foot forward, and who wins, wins, and who doesn't, doesn't. And, you know, I was very fortunate. I won, and Roy was very supportive. To this day, we're friends. But it was kind of the what I guess today I would say was kind of the good old days of campaigning. You know, you didn't have to be arch enemies or rivals. You didn't have to badmouth the competition. You just kind of put your best foot forward, and with in essence saying, I trust the judgment of the people.
And how did you campaign? I mean, did you?
I got a great story I'm going to share with you about that, but yeah, that was kind of the time where you walked door to door and you had these little hangers that you put on the door and, you know, vote for me and whatever it may be. And at the time, Debbie and I, we lived on Ruskin, and my gosh, we would have had two kids of the four at that time, but you know, you just walk the streets and knock on doors, and you'd get some friends and want to go on one side of the street, and you just go up and down the street, and it was just the old fashioned way of doing it. You didn't spend much money on advertising, you know. You just put your best foot forward. But I did something that I felt was really important. That was to share what my vision was of a community that I love dearly, that I grew up in, that was already a really great place, but I felt it could be better. So what would have to happen in order for this to be better for the future? And so I put together what at the time was called white papers. I had like 12 different topics, and I still have that, by the way. It's very interesting to look at. And there were maybe 12 or 14 different topics, just one paragraph or two saying, here's what I think we should do, or here's some thoughts about these topics. And my goodness, Steve, it goes back to one of the topics, by the way, was the old N.O. Nelson complex.
Yes, right.
That SIU had. So, but it was really just kind of the good old-fashioned stuff. And the story that I'll never forget is that... it was always kind of traditionally you'd put something and say, if you need a ride to the polls, I don't know if you ever remember it,
yes.
You know, call this number, right, for a free ride to the polls. Okay,
yes.
So election day, I'm kind of sitting around waiting for the phones to ring, and they don't ring. And all of a sudden, late morning, I get a phone call. And it's somebody in general says something like, hey, somebody told me that I could call you and you'd give me a ride to the poll so I could vote today. I said, sure, I'd be happy to. Gave me his address, and I was excited. So I cleaned the car up just to kind of make sure I was ready for all the calls I would get. I got one. Okay. Well, the one call that I got was from an elderly gentleman who lived in an area which is referred to as Isherwood. It's down by Richards Brick Company. And I drove down there and kind of got to the end of the street, and lo and behold, here was this gentleman sitting in a couch at the end of the street. This is true. Okay, you know, I helped him. He got in the car, and I took him out to vote, and helped him get in. Older gentleman, nice man. And when he was done voting, he came out, he hopped in the car, and he said, "Hey, I just want to tell you something. I really, really appreciate the ride, and Roy, I wish you the best." So I gave him a ride to the polls, and he voted against me. He kind of the wrong guy, okay?
Were any of the elections that you ran in hotly contested or closely?
No, I think the first one, when Roy and I ran for mayor, and it really it wasn't a real close race per se, but... And then I ran for alderman again, unopposed, and then I ran for mayor. I'm sorry, then I ran, I get this backwards, ran against Roy for mayor, and then I ran the next four times unopposed. So I had one, I did have one race in my, quote, career, and that was when a gentleman ran against me, I guess the third time I was running for mayor. So I ran unopposed the most of the time, and I kind of credited that to nobody else really wanted the job, but you know, I really enjoyed what I did.
What were some of the difficult issues you had to deal with?
I'll tell you what, the issues back then were primarily infrastructure, highways. This was back when 157 was two lanes, 150 Troy Road, was a disaster. Traffic around here was awful, because that was also a time when the growth and development of the community really started.
And the railroads were still running.
Exactly. So you had the railroads going across Troy Road. Traffic was a mess. But you had a community that basically was intersected by three state highways. You had 157, you had 159, you had 143, which were responsibilities, of course, of the state of Illinois. The state really never recognized that necessarily in this area. So the biggest challenge, I think, was the traffic and the infrastructure in a community that was really, really growing for, I think, a lot of good reasons. So I spent a great deal of my time in Springfield and lobbying for funds for these highways. And
how did you do that? How do you lobby?
You know what?
In Springfield.
I guess the lesson that I learned through that was, if you're not persistent and if you're not aggressive, you may not get anywhere. So I almost had to be the biggest pest around to talk to. I'll give you an example of this. Dick Durbin, certainly now the senator, one of the senators from Illinois. Dick at the time was a congressman, and his area was Springfield. And I remember when I was shortly after I was elected mayor, if not about the same time, the district boundaries for congressional districts had changed, and all of a sudden Dick Durbin now came up, Edwardsville was included in his new congressional district. And I remember him coming to Edwardsville one day shortly after that, and we were sitting in the office at John Hunter's insurance, Casson's insurance, and I met then Congressman Durbin there, and he said, "Hey, this is a new part of my district. I want to get involved. I want to, show my support." And he said, "So, what can I do to help?" And I said, "If you really want to help the people of this area, you've got to help us get some federal funds for some highway improvements, even though these are state highways." And he said, "What do you think the number one need is?" And I said, "Well, if I'm reading this right or understand this correctly, it'd be difficult to get federal money solely for a state highway improvement." So I remember coming up with a plan that basically said that we need to extend South Main Street all the way out to Center Grove Road, where the theater is today. Mm-hmm. And I said, "That'll be a new road, and I think it'll be eligible for federal funds." And it's a project I'll always be very proud of, because that extension of South Main Street is now a major thoroughfare that helped solve a lot of our traffic problems. In 6 months, he was able to obtain $500,000 allocation to start some engineering and design. So I think to a large degree, being aggressive and not giving up and being persistent in fighting for the needs of our community was something that I was more than happy to take on.
Did you find, was Jay Hoffman our state legislator rep
Yes.
at that time?
And Jay was extremely helpful, and I had a marvelous relationship with Jay, and Jay did a lot for this area, including his role at the SIU, the N.O. Nelson place. But yeah, so it was the local, Bill Hain, over Bill's tenure, even when Bill was back in the state's attorney's office. I was very fortunate to have good relationships with him, and so I think that again, being mayor is a nonpartisan position. So I wasn't a big party person per se on either side. I was committed to doing what I felt was best to hopefully continue to build and improve this community.
Well, did you find that being mayor that you had some big interests that were pressing you for different things, different economic you know, whether it be developers or contractors or bankers?
Absolutely. And I think part of it, and again, I really don't have any complaints about being mayor, but you know, back in the prime of development here in Edwardsville, this is the same time we were having these challenges of infrastructure, our capacity for our water and sewer plants. Not something that you think about a lot, but it better be there. It better be right. And then when you start seeing the growth, in large part, I think, due to SIU and its tremendous impact on this area, the proximity to St. Louis, there were just a lot of good things that said Edwardsville is a good place to invest in. Well, the problem is that at the growth time of the boom of development, it kind of seemed to be that anybody that had a pickup truck and a hammer was all of a sudden a developer.
Right.
And so we knew the growth was going to happen just because of the many attributes of the area. And we said, you know what, we got to slow down here. And we have got to make sure that growth is not simply for the sake of getting bigger. Whatever growth we have here, whether it's residential or commercial, we need to make sure that that growth is a long-term asset for this community, not a short-term asset for the guy that's got a pickup truck and wants to build a house and then move on and build another house in some other community or whatever it may be. So we developed some very strict development codes, and that was tough. Because we just felt like it had to be done. If we're going to do it, we have to do it right. Mm-hmm. And we were very lucky. We have had some excellent residential developers in this community, thank goodness. But we just felt like we need to set the standard for what is our standard here, development. You know, do we just want development just because we want to get a little bigger? Do we want development simply because if we let this business in town, it'll produce a couple dollars in sales tax? No, that wasn't it. It was what's best for the community long term. So that was a big challenge. A big challenge was to set the standards that they're reasonable, but there's expectations that come with investing in this community. And I think in general, I think we did a good job of that if you look at Edwardsville today.
Yeah, I think so too.
So, you know,
so you talked about the growth in this area. The population grew,
yep.
Income grew, value
yep.
grew. And you mentioned SIU Edwardsville is one factor. Our geographic location
Absolutely.
Is another factor. What else is involved? And what's this? What did you see as the city's role in helping to promote this phenomenal growth that occurred?
Yeah, I think that...
And as you said, it's a very positive kind of growth, although you know, I'm sure there's some who critique it.
Of course. Well, I think you mentioned some of the attributes that kind of made our job much easier. So maybe start with education in general. Okay, so you just look at Edwardsville at the time, population's what, maybe 16,000 or whatever it may have been back then. But you had SIU, which was a tremendous economic boom for the region, not just this community. You had have always had a strong public school system here. And again, a town of 17 or whatever thousand, you had parochial school opportunities for people, okay? You had the impact that Lewis and Clark was beginning to make in terms of the area. So you couldn't have, I'm not sure you could have found an area that had more strong attributes for education. That was a big plus, and as you said, the geographic things. So what I think the city had to do was to try to guide the development in the area of high quality, long-term asset, being very welcoming for residential growth, but at the same time holding standards that were best for the community. Another challenge at that point was as you see the growth happening, and this was one of my major issues when I ran for mayor, it's that, okay, we're going to see growth for all those reasons I mentioned, but we don't want to have a new Edwardsville and an old Edwardsville. We want one Edwardsville. So therefore, we have got to hold in the highest priority investing in our older established neighborhoods. That was kind of a theme. And that was downtown back in the early, late 70s, early 80s, was declining. So when you saw some of the growth was happening where? It was happening on the outskirts. So as that growth is happening on the outskirts, all of a sudden we're kind of recognizing that our core Edwardsville, whether it's downtown or whether it's our older established residential neighborhoods, was not advancing. It was declining. I remember and have pictures of downtown Edwardsville with weeds that were 8 to 12 inches high coming out some of the sidewalks. I'm talking about Main Street. I'm talking about the old wood utility poles that if you look down the street, one would be leaning this way, one would be leaning that way, and then one would be straight, and vacant buildings. And it was to a point where we can't forget about where we have come from as a community. That was the base of this community for many years, and we cannot allow that to deteriorate anymore. So we started an investment in downtown Edwardsville and the older established neighborhoods, and it was a marvelous thing. You look at our downtown today, and I don't think there's too many of a community this size that are that nice.
I agree with you. What was the role of the city in trying to attract money, development, and particularly the renovation of downtown?
Well, I'll tell you what, there was a gentleman that... That I have said kind of came to our rescue in downtown Edwardsville many years ago. Name was Ralph Cordy.
Oh, yeah.
You know Ralph well. And we had a section of at the corner of Main Street and Main, and I guess it was St. Louis Street, a dilapidated building. It was referred to as Edwardsville Center, and I wish I'd have some pictures to show. It was absolutely, it looked like it was in the middle of Baghdad. I mean, it was just a disaster. Vacant building, it was awful. And of course, we were fortunate. What held downtown together for years was being the county seat. Those people had to show up there. They didn't have much of a choice. If they worked for the county, the chances are they had to come to Edwardsville, and that's where they worked. And it also came to be that if people had to travel from Alton or Grant or wherever it was to the county seat, guess what? They had to come to Edwardsville, whether they liked it or not. Okay, so we had that core base there. So we built around that. And Ralph Cordy and a guy named Gary Balke, this was right about the time I was mayor, a little before actually. And they decided to invest in an office building, which is now today Mark Twain, used to be Mark Twain Plaza, the new buildings. And that spurred things. And then all of a sudden, you had people like Bob Wetzel, the Bank of Edwardsville, always been a fixture in downtown Edwardsville. Listen, when they expanded their complex, they didn't have to do it there. And I knew it. And we talked about it. They could have went anywhere in the outskirts to the, quote, new part of Edwardsville, the new development. But they decided they were going to stay with our downtown. And then all of a sudden you had people like business entities like Walgreens, as a good example, that said, you know what, we believe in downtown Edwardsville. So a lot of it was we did offer some significant incentives to draw people there. But and part of that was we could not expect the Bank of Edwardsville to add on to their complex and then have all kinds of issues with water supply. So that's where the city invested. We basically reconstructed the infrastructure to make sure that when people, even as simple as a Walgreens or the Bank of Edwardsville or whoever it may be, you know, you can't, You can't expect them to invest in something that's considered to be a bad investment. It's got to be a positive thing for them. So we built the infrastructure so they didn't have to worry about that. We improved the streets. We improved the sidewalks. We said, if you invest, I guess my kind of take on this was this, that, and I remember saying this in city government, if we're not willing to invest in downtown Edwardsville, then why in the world would somebody from the private sector come in here and invest? This has got to be a true partnership of the city building the infrastructure, fixing up the utilities, making all the things available for success for private sector investment. And sometimes I shook my head, but it said, this worked. It did. And then all of a sudden it was, I'm tired, sick and tired of seeing, wood telephone poles falling all over the place. It looked awful. So then we started the infrastructure program for the streetscape and all of those kinds of things. But a lot of it was you couldn't be afraid to ask people. It didn't bother me in the least to go to the Bob Wetzels and people who were very good to me, by the way, and say, Bob, what can we do to assure that the Bank of Edwardsville is going to stay in downtown Edwardsville and be a core part of our downtown? And, it's a little thing, but I think they appreciated the fact that we wanted them to stay. Our position wasn't, do what you want to do. Our position was, we respect whatever your decision is in the end, but we want you to know that this is where we want you and here's why. And maybe in a small way, those kinds of things helped in the end.
Who besides Bob Wetzel was instrumental in
wow,
guiding or promoting the growth of this area?
John Fruit.
John
Fruit played a big role, and there was an economic development commission that Gordon Broom, a lot of these players, I think, that Gordy was on, and so we appointed an economic development commission, and they helped kind of promote, and a lot of that was just having people like that to rely upon to be goodwill ambassadors for the city. But the Ralph Cordy, Ralph coming in and making that investment, Ralph was a major player in the St. Louis area, one of the most respected business people that I've ever met over the years. But I think that, then you got to look at you may refer to these as kind of the littler guys. Ember's Menswear, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
It was kind of that small business. Bob Schwartz. Now I'm starting to think of Bob Schwartz with Schwartz Drugstore.
Right.
Alan Legal with you name it. It was really astounding how players of all sizes, of all different areas, came together and basically with that thing that basically says, this downtown is worth saving. This downtown being the county seat. As mayor, when somebody came into Edwardsville maybe once every 3 years from, let's say, Alton or you name it, and they're coming here not necessarily because they kind of want to be here, but because they have to be here to do business with the county, I want them to come into Edwardsville and say, wow, this is nice. This is a nice place. And it sounds like a minuscule thing, but I think it was important that we make those kinds of investments in our older established neighborhoods, number one, downtown, and number two, some of the older residential areas. A good example, Coventry Street. Coventry Street back in the mid-80s was probably 80% rental property. Nice homes, but just kind of converted to rental property. And it was deteriorating, quite frankly. But it wasn't just the homes that were deteriorating, it was the sewer system and the water system that couldn't support much more than what was there. So we invested in those neighborhoods. We said, we need new sidewalks, we need nicer streets, we need nicer infrastructure that supports somebody's willingness to invest. And that happened at a pretty rapid pace. Rich Walker, a gentleman that I think you know Rich well, Rich was an integral part of the city council back in those days. Rich was kind of, he was a guy that really helped spearhead the kind of restoration of downtown. Rich was the guy that was willing to take the lead on taking the Wildy Theater, which was a negative for our downtown, and turn it into a positive. And if you look at the impact of that place today, it's been a tremendous asset for the community. But there were risks that were taken in order to get there. And Rich was a guy that was willing to help. He and I and a lot of others say, you know what? Our downtown's worth this investment.
Well, Gary, two names that you didn't mention are Bob Plummer and the Cassins.
Yeah, I should have.
Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, don't feel like you have to say that. But it was notable that those names weren't mentioned. So I didn't know whether or not they were just if they were. And this is no criticism. Were they intimately involved in kind of thinking of the future?
I think first of all, I would say with Cassins, the answer is absolutely, and the same with Bob. Okay, so Cassins, and that's one that if you look at it, I talk a lot about the Bank of Edwardsville. Well, you know who was that? It was Albert Cassins. It was Cassins' family giving support to the players at the bank, of the Bob Wetzels and all those. So certainly Cassins. Let me give you another example of the asset of Cassins. Cassins Transport. It's a massive company. They don't have to be in downtown Edwardsville today. They could be anywhere in the country doing their business, but they stuck with us downtown. So I commend them. From a standpoint of residential development, Bob Plummer saw the value of investing in Edwardsville. He was there. Bob was not the guy that I referred to with a pickup truck and a hammer.
Right.
Okay. I mean, Bob was a true developer, true businessman, self-made, very much so. And Bob, we all knew this, that one of the ways to get new business investment, much of that business investment was driven by rooftops. Okay, so it doesn't matter that we want a whatever restaurant, chain restaurant. It doesn't matter. If the numbers aren't there for them, they're not going to come here. They don't care who the mayor is. They could care less. So rooftops played a major role in driving the business side of the investment. And Bob played a major role in doing that.
Gary, was there kind of a, I don't even know if I can ask the question correctly. Was there an overarching vision that you guys came up with, or even not that guided this remarkable growth?
I guess a lot of that happened so fast because it was rather rapid. That, as I said earlier, we kind of had to say at one point, oh, let's slow down. Let's just slow down for a minute, and let's make sure that we all are on the same page about what that vision can and should be for the future of the community. So I think that's when we did take some steps back and said, listen, we need to do a much better job of developing a comprehensive plan. And we did. We stopped for a while and said, we need to update our comprehensive plan. We need to develop development codes and not restrictions, but guidelines. And I think the vision was, whatever we do, let's make sure that it's good for the long-term benefit of the community.
And you know, I would think that the we in that sentence, at least in reference to the city, was you and your allies in the city council.
Sure.
and city government, watching out for the issues like infrastructure, sewer, and roads.
Exactly.
And safety.
Plan commission, zoning board, those
zoning,
kinds of things.
Right, and setting the codes and schools. Who, what other areas of the we are there? And did you like get together for coffee and say, hey, this is where I think we ought to go next?
The one thing that whether it was a role that I was so fortunate to play as mayor or even here at the YMCA was, you know, I learned from many years ago from many of the mentors that I kind of mentioned earlier that sometimes it's a lot more important to listen than to talk. And one example of listening was there's much more to the success of a community than a handful of people that are elected, okay? It's the citizenry, everybody. So to give you an example, when I went into office as mayor, there were probably around 40 people that served on various boards and commissions, whether it's a park board or a plan commission or a zoning board, or I mentioned the Economic Development Commission area. When I left, the city had about 110 because we expanded that, and that was one way for us to get more input. And sometimes it may not make you feel real good at the time, but sometimes you also have to look at the other perspective of development. A lot of people really weren't as wild about development. It was like, gosh, you know, we're okay the way we are. Why do we have to do this? Why? So, you know, so I always kind of felt like I want to hear from the naysayers too, because I want that to be a balance of the decisions that we kind of make. So growing up here, I mean, and I love this, by the way. You know, if I go to the grocery store, chances are there was somebody that would bump into me and say nice things, and there were some that would say not so nice things. But I think listening helped us. I really do. And I think that a couple examples of development that you see today, and you see down in the what they call the American Bottoms, all the distribution centers. Well, that was rather controversial when it started, because it was good quality farmland, and it was there was nothing wrong with it, obviously, but there were others that had that vision of development. And we annexed that area down there because we wanted to have some say in what that development would be. That's why we annexed it. And if you look at it today, it produces thousands and thousands of jobs. And I think it's turned out to be good for the community and the region, as a whole.
Well, let's talk about some of the resistance to the change and to the growth. You mentioned there were those who just wanted to keep Edwardsville a quaint city, the kind of town, small town that they liked and loved and were used to. I've heard people suggest that they don't like the change because it's the suburbanization of this area that we're, and I guess that must mean that it becomes kind of homogenized.
Exactly.
And there are probably, do people complain about their taxes, property taxes going up to build for the infrastructure?
Well, not really. I mean, you know, nobody's happy with property taxes, okay? One thing I'm really proud of is that in the 20 years I was mayor, our tax rate actually decreased, okay? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean your tax bill went way down.
Right.
But it meant it didn't go up proportionally as it could have based upon the property values, okay? So I think that this kind of all ties back into the issue of downtown and the older established neighborhoods. And here was the balance that I felt like we had to have. That if we weren't willing to invest in our older neighborhoods, then why would anybody else even think about doing that, okay? So what we wanted to do was, as best we could, retain, I think, what you were talking about here, and that's the charm and character of the nice, quaint, small, friendly town. And that's not as easy to do when people are wanting to be here. You know, they want to invest here. They know it's a good investment, whether it's their own personal homes or whether it's their businesses. So it was like, okay, we're growing, and we know we're growing, and you know what? We can't put a gate up. You know, I had a lot of people after they moved here, like, you know, a couple years earlier from who knows where, to say, you got to stop this growth. Well, I said, well, you're lucky we didn't stop it 2 years ago. You wouldn't be here. You know, but, you know, I think it really just comes to a balance. It's like, okay, well, we're going to have the new growth. That's not a bad thing, but let's make sure it's good quality, number one. Let's make sure that it's a long-lasting asset, maybe number two. Let's make sure that we don't forget about who we are and where we came from with our little, nice little quaint downtown, which was no longer charming. But how can we kind of bring all those things together? And there were people that said, you know, and there people say it today. You know, I mean, I run people now that say, they said, the growth is kind of a bit much now. Can we kind of just slow down? And of course, I'm not, it's not my role anymore, but you got to have balance. And I think an example of that that I'll never forget is that back in, I guess it was 2002, I had been on the Illinois Municipal League Board of Directors for, at that point, like 10 years. And the Illinois Municipal League is the league of cities in the state, okay? Illinois has like 1,100 municipalities from, you know, towns of 10 people to Chicago. And I was selected president of the Illinois Municipal League Board of Directors. So it gave me an opportunity to basically go north, south, east, and west, to smaller towns, to bigger towns, to you name it, from Paris, Illinois on the east, to Galesburg, to Cairo, to you name it, just as a representative of the municipal league. And the one thing, and I just told somebody this the other day, that the one thing that I will never forget is that no matter where I was in the state, as I was driving back home to good old Edwardsville, I would say, I'm glad of the challenges that we have versus others. And by that, and that's very true in my opinion, I would go to a city in eastern central Illinois, nice little town. Their challenges were as follows. People couldn't wait to get out of there. Businesses were leaving as quickly as they could. Nobody wanted to invest any money in the community. Kids were growing up and couldn't wait to get out of their little hometown. And this was happening all over the state. And I'd come back to Edwardsville, and here's my challenges. Too much growth, parking problems downtown, need to refurbish the infrastructure to prepare for a new investment, businesses that wanted to be here, families that wanted to move here. And I, every time I'd come home, I'd say, you know what? Makes me feel better about my challenges.
Your problems.
Yeah.
Did the presence of the university create any special tensions or challenges?
You know, that I've heard that, what, that would have been well before my time, I think. You know, kind of when the first, you know,
The land acquisition.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff, how many years ago. But I got to tell you something. I think this university, unquestionably, is not only one of the greatest assets of this community, it's a great asset of this entire region and the state. So you think about it. How many people, maybe looking at one, ended up coming here to this place, to this community, to this area, because of that? A lot. And these were people that were certainly highly educated. They were willing to invest in their homes and their property. The people that came to this area because of the university, have had an immense positive impact on this community, no doubt about it. You know, I have always felt strongly and very positively about SIUE. And to pay back that, let me just say this. I remember saying this to Vaughn Vandergrift before his departure. I said, Vaughn, matter of fact, this was at Vaughn's little party for him at Meridian Ballroom, if I remember. A going away kind of thing. A very nice thing. And I spoke I said, you know, I've been working on I worked on David Werner, and that just didn't quite work with David. I've been working on Vaughn, and I said, this is a relatively simple thing. But if my son Andrew, he better graduate in 4 years, which he hasn't, by the way. He's now in his fifth year at Carbondale. I said, if Andrew graduates in 4 years, that means that Debbie and I will have had 20 years of our kids in SIU, either Edwards or Carbondale. Isn't that neat? And I said, there's nobody in this room that can't tell me that ain't worth at least having a sidewalk named after me. I said, Vaughn, I never ask you for a building. I just want a sidewalk. I want a bench. I want something for those 20 years of investment. But you know, I mean, I look at my kids, and I mean, Ashley went here for 4 years, went on to law school at Carbondale, has a tremendous career. Amanda, 4 years here, great job. Abby, 4 years in Carbondale, great job. Andrew is, we're trying to wind him through. Matter of fact, I may have to call on you for some help. but you know, SIU's it's been marvelous for this area. And I personally feel like I'm very blessed to have grown up in a really nice town that, in my view, keeps getting better.
Well, I think I give Dave Werner the credit for really beginning to emphasize the Edwardsville.
Absolutely.
And that over, with it, maybe over the SIU part. And he said, after all, people talk about Berkeley. They don't talk about University of California at Berkeley. They just say Berkeley. Well, we
You're
should
right.
just Edwardsville.
Right.
So that logo he
yes.
developed had Edwardsville, and then Vaughn evolve that into the E.
The E, exactly.
And it's just absolutely, really, I think, important that the symbiotic relationship between the city and
I think there's a true connection because of those kinds of things. Not that there wasn't ever a true connection, but that really, it kind of solidified that togetherness, you know. And I have people that come in from out of town. I love to drive them around this campus. You know, I mean, you know, I think we're just really fortunate. And I think on the education part, when Lewis and Clark, I have to tell you a story that about Lewis and Clark, the Nelson property. And you probably remember some of the history of this, but SIU had that for many years, and it was declining, and SIU finally said, this ain't worth investing, you know, money in to keep it kind of going. So it was kind of abandoned, right?
Right.
Well, I remember my white papers talked about that when I first ran for mayor, what can be done there. And I kind of said back then, it's probably, in order for this to succeed, whether we like it or not, it's probably going to require some type of support from taxing entities. I don't think the private sector is going to go in there and clean it up and fix it up, and I just don't think that's going to happen. So so lo and behold, Dale Chapman, who, as you know, Dale's a pretty aggressive guy. He's a doer, I think. So I'll never forget, it was in conversations with SIU and with Lewis and Clark, and Jay Hoffman played a big role in this, but I will never forget the day. I was at City Hall, and my secretary said, Dale Chapman's on the phone. And I said, okay, so Dale, how you doing? We have our little conversation. Harry, guess what? I said, what? He said, we got to deal with SIU on the Nelson place. I said, really? He said, yep. He said, we got to deal. We're going to take this project on, and you're going to be proud of what we do and all that good stuff. So Dale then, I said, well, can you kind of share with me what kind of deal did you get? And Dale said, we're getting that whole place for a dollar. Now, Steve, you're going to love this. And I said, Dale, I think you got a big problem. He said, what's that? What do you mean big problem? I said, well, I I said, state statute, it requires you cannot pay more than the appraised value, and the appraised value ain't a dollar, Dale. It was a joke, of course. I said, Dale, you're kind of overpaying it a dollar. But if you look at that, that's a good example, you know, of turning something in. That's like the city's old sewer plant. It's now the Watershed Nature Center. That and the N.O. Nelson thing is kind of turning something that's a negative into a positive.
Negative into a positive.
You know, but so SIU has played a marvelous role, not just for the community, but for me personally. And that's a value to me.
Was there any particular challenge that you felt that you just wished you could do it over again and address differently?
Well, I'm sure that there are some that I'm a pretty positive in general person, so that kind of stuff I forget, I guess. But no, I think that there were some real tough decisions that had to be made in order to have the end product be what it is or was. One that I won't forget is that the city of Edwardsville back 20 years ago, 15 years ago, was one of the few cities that didn't have a utility tax. So, but what we did have was we had to buy city stickers for your car, and you had to buy dog license and all this little nickel and dime stuff. So I said, in order for us to achieve our goal of improving our infrastructure, streets, water, sewer, sidewalks, all those kinds of things, you know, whether you like it or not, you gotta have money for it. So I propose that we impose a 3% utility tax, which is very standard and nothing, but it's a new tax and people don't like that. But what I said was, if we impose that tax, then I propose that we do away with all the nickel and dime stuff that we bug people with. We make people drive to City Hall to buy a city sticker so we can get 10 bucks. That's crazy. So we put a package together that basically said, if this 3% utility tax goes into effect and is approved by a majority city council, here's what we will do. We will delete all these other piddly nickel and dime things, but we will also commit to 75% of every penny that comes through the utility tax can only be spent on streets and sidewalks. And to this day, that happens. And that's why our residential streets have had a lot of improvements, and Hal and those today get that nice, you know, resource available to them. But I think in terms of regrets, you know, certainly I think, you know, sometimes you wish things could happen faster. But I guess that's just government, you know. I'm just trying to think if there's anything that kind of really jumps out at me, and there's really not. You know, I mean, I'm content, and I'm sure we made mistakes along the way, but you know, I think the goal when I went into office was to hopefully play a little role in making it a better place when I left office, and I feel pretty good about that.
I think you should. I think,
yeah,
you
know, I feel pretty good about
job.
That.
Is there anything else that we should cover or talk about that you can think of right now? We can always pick up again later.
I'm kind of thinking I think we covered a lot of things. I think that one of the things that that I think really kind of maybe reemphasizing this, but again, when you have people that want to be a part of a community, that's a good thing. And I think that says a lot about the community, that people want to be here. They're not necessarily coming here because they don't have to pay taxes. They're not necessarily coming here because, you know, groceries are cheaper. They're coming here because I think that they believe that it's a good investment for them, their business, their family, or it's a good investment in the lives of their kids. That to me, those are really important things. So when I would see people couldn't wait to get out of their hometowns, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm glad we don't have that. And I'm really glad that people, if they're going to move to the Metro East area, that they're going to look at Edwardsville. And there's a lot of different things that make that happen. And it is the education components. I think it's a safe community. I think it's a fiscally sound community. It's a place where if you're investing your money, you're going to most likely invest it in something that gives you the highest rate of return that you can get. So in my view, if you're going to invest in land or property or a new home, chances are you want to make that investment based upon what you think is best for your future and your, quote, return, but maybe a return in different ways than just money. And I think that's why there's just an awful lot of people that come here. And the Y is a good example of that. You know, I mean, you know, I see, you know, I mean, I served in those dual capacities for a long time. And, you know, I think that it's a good place. And, you know, you've played a role in that. The people, this wasn't an achievement by an administration. This wasn't an achievement by a handful of people. This was an achievement, I believe, and by the way, we've got a long way to go. We're not there yet. We're getting better, I think, every day. But I think it's an achievement of a true collective effort by all the partners and players. And that's what makes me kind of feel good that for a while there, I was the captain of that.
Very good. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.